right, Cora. So about Spotify's position on AI music, Daniel Ek mentioned that the rise of AI-generated content could be great culturally and help Spotify boost engagement and revenue. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, Jack, I see where Ek is coming from. AI-generated music could definitely open up new creative avenues and might even help more independent artists get their break. But there's a big but here. I worry about how this AI surge will affect the livelihood of actual human musicians.
That's a valid concern, especially considering Spotify's track record with their discovery mode. I mean, it's basically a modern-day payola, right? Artists get a lower royalty rate in exchange for better algorithmic promotion. It feels like a slippery slope where AI music could just drown out human creators if that's what's being algorithmically pushed.
Exactly. And discovery mode is already controversial among artists and lawmakers. They're pushing this discounted content without users really knowing. If AI tracks dominate the playlist, it can end up being a ghost town for real artists. There's no one to protest if the music creators are basically ghosts themselves.
That's pretty spooky. And you know what's even more eerie? The way Spotify's algorithms have gotten so good at recommending music based on what users like, it feels like they're primed to push AI-generated music even more effectively. It's like they're sharpening their swords to enter this AI music battleground fully armed.
Haha, yeah. It's like we're entering a Black Mirror episode. But seriously, these algorithms can undoubtedly curate the perfect playlist to keep users hooked. However, if we depend too much on AI, we might lose some of the soul that makes music so emotionally impactful. Remember, great music often comes from unpredictable human experiences, which AI can't replicate.
Absolutely. There's definitely something about the human touch that's irreplaceable. Maybe Spotify envisions this as a way to experiment beyond the conventional while retaining the core essence of music. But how do they balance this AI influx without sidelining real musicians? That's the million-dollar question.
It's going to require a mix of innovation and regulation, I think. Spotify could offer clearer demarcations between AI-generated content and human-created tracks, ensuring transparency. And lawmakers will need to step in to ensure fair compensation and opportunities for human artists. Otherwise, we're just setting up for a clash between humans and Silicon Symphonies.
True. Transparency would be a start. It's like labels on our food. We want to know what we're consuming. At the same time, artists should be part of that feedback loop to help shape how AI integrations unfold in their industry.
I agree. And artists should be empowered, not just treated as pawns in a game of engagement and revenue. Let's face it. If artists are demotivated or feel they're being replaced, it could stifle creativity in the long run.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see how Spotify and other platforms navigate this space. On one hand, it's exciting to think about the innovations AI can bring to music. On the other hand, we must safeguard the authentic creative process and the people behind it.
Right. And let's not forget, music has always been a cultural touchstone. It reflects our stories, struggles, and joys. Relying too heavily on AI could dilute that cultural richness. It's a tightrope for sure.
Yeah, definitely a tricky balance. But, you know, that's where the tech talks merge with deep philosophical debates about art and society. And that's why we're here, to have these discussions.
Sure thing, man. It's going to be fascinating to watch how this plays out over the next few years. Maybe we'll all be tuning into Spotify channels curated entirely by AI composers one day. Or we'll see a renaissance of human creativity fighting back against the AI tide.
Either way, it's going to be one wild ride. Let's just hope the algorithms have a taste for genuinely good music.
You got that right, Jack. Here's to hoping for a future where human and AI artists can coexist harmoniously, making playlists that truly resonate.
Cheers to that. Let's dive into this experimental expansion in the Global South using our ML models for satellite imagery. Core, this seems like a game changer for solar assessments in remote areas that have lesser access to advanced technology.
Absolutely, Jack. It's fascinating how we're leveraging machine learning models with satellite imagery to create these high-resolution digital surface models and roof segmentation maps. Imagine a village in Kenya or Peru suddenly able to assess solar potential as accurately as a tech-savvy city like San Francisco.
Right. And the Satellite Sunroof paper presented at NeurIPS 2024 details this methodology. Kaur, you worked on some related projects, haven't you? How does this compare?
Oh, definitely. I was involved in a project that mapped vegetation health using similar techniques. So I know firsthand the transformative potential this has. The precision we're achieving now is simply staggering. What excites me most is how this can democratize access to solar technology. Just a decade ago, this was unthinkable for large swaths of the population.
Exactly. This tech isn't just about solar panels. It's about empowering communities. And speaking of empowerment, how's this sound? Coding on an airplane without Wi-Fi and still hammering out new features. Does that resonate with you as much as it does with me?
Oh, it definitely does. Let's be honest. The idea of being disconnected while on a flight, yet hyper-productive, sounds like a dream. Imagine the quiet focus, right? It's like you're isolated from all the distractions. I can never get that kind of peace at the office.
You know, in these scenarios, a type checker becomes your best friend. It feels like having a co-pilot, making sure you're steering the code in the right direction. The editor, catching typos and misused variables is an absolute lifesaver.
True that. It reminds me of when autocomplete first came out. I was like, wow, I no longer need to remember long, complicated function names. And with type definitions helping AI code completion now, the game's changed yet again. Trusting the AI to handle mundane errors makes development so much more efficient.
And speaking of trust, let's talk about OpenLayer solving the AI reliability problem. It's one thing to develop these advanced systems, but how do we ensure they're dependable, right?
That's where robust testing comes in. OpenLayer offers an environment where teams can rigorously test their AI systems, making sure the results are consistent and reliable. For startups to big enterprises, this kind of dependability is crucial. It's like building the bridge once and knowing it will hold for years.
Spot on. Reliable AI isn't just about deploying something flashy. It's about creating systems that users can depend on day in, day out. And by taking part in these reliability-focused projects, you can significantly shape how these models are tested and deployed.
High impact indeed. AI reliability and trust are paramount, and there's so much growth potential here. It's an exciting time to be involved in this field, don't you think?
No doubt. And on a lighter note, Kaur, remember when you got that handmade knife? You said it felt like cutting into the air. That sense of realizing something new also exists in software development, like when everything compiles perfectly on the first run.
Right. The exhilaration when you nail it on the first try, it's pure magic. It's akin to that knife gliding through an onion effortlessly. When tech comes together seamlessly, it's truly a beautiful thing.
Indeed. Drawing parallels from knives to software might seem a stretch, but it's accurate. Precision, reliability, and efficiency are the keystones of both. And with AI guiding us, we're not just cutting onions, we're carving out the future.
Exactly, Jack. With advancements like these, we're not far from seeing even more critical sectors like AI observability and logistics undergo transformative changes. The future is wide open, and we're primed to shape it.
And on that note, let's keep pushing these boundaries. The more we innovate, the closer we get to making impactful global improvements.
Agreed. Tech for good. That's the ethos we should all adopt. Here's to many more breakthroughs and the fascinating road ahead.
Yes, let's keep exploring, debating, and innovating. There's so much more to unfold in this space. You know, Kaur, what really gets me about type definitions is how they reveal those hidden gaps in a project spec. I mean, it's almost like a cheat code for discovering potential pitfalls before you've even started coding.
Right. It's like having a crystal ball. You map out your entities, their properties, and relationships, and suddenly you see all those ambiguous edges that could trip you up later on. Saves a ton of headaches, especially in big projects.
Exactly. I remember this one time we were working on implementing recurring events for our app. Initially, it seemed straightforward. Users can create events that repeat. Easy, right? But as soon as we got into the type definitions, it was like opening Pandora's box.
Oh, totally. Recurring events can sound simple, but the moment you dive into the nitty-gritty, you realize just how complex it gets. The timing rules, frequency, exceptions, it's a maze.
Yes. So we created a get expanded event function to handle it all. The function took an event and, if it was recurring, expanded it into all its instances. Otherwise, it'd just give us the single event. This was crucial for our event list to display all the upcoming instances correctly.
That makes sense. And I bet defining those types up front helped a lot. You knew exactly what an event should look like and all the potential states it could be in.
Precisely. It forced us to think through every possible scenario beforehand. Instead of hitting a roadblock halfway through development, we caught those edge cases early. It was like writing the blueprint for the project before laying down a single line of code.
And let's not forget that these types act as excellent documentation, too. I mean, you come back to the code 6 months later, and instead of getting lost in the details, you can understand the high-level structure just by looking at the type definitions.
Absolutely. It's this dual-purpose magic, both a guide for the coder and a living document that's always in sync with the code base. No more outdated docs to worry about.
Speaking of dual purpose, I found types to be a godsend when dealing with feature flags. Instead of the generic string or Boolean return types, you can use type assertions to nail down exactly what you're expecting.
Oh, definitely. Like, when we had that longer free trial flag, we knew it could only be control or 30 days. By asserting these types, we made the code much more reliable and easier to work with down the line.
And it's so helpful for the folks coming in fresh to the project. They see the type definitions and boom, they've got the context they need without the usual confusion.
Yeah, it's all about making those connections clear. It reminds me of using a checklist in a complicated process, making sure every step is accounted for. The hard part really is setting up that scaffolding and defining those types accurately.
It's a bit like creating the perfect recipe, isn't it? Once you have all the ingredients listed and the steps figured out, cooking the meal becomes a lot less daunting.
And let's be honest, it feels pretty empowering to see your entire code base through the lens of types. You feel in control, and every action a user takes is just another type jump.
True. And those user actions get reduced to a series of peer functions. It's this beautiful mathematical dance of data transforming from one type to another. Very satisfying once it all clicks together.
Couldn't agree more. It's like solving a complex puzzle, piece by piece. So, what about you, Cor? Any particular type-driven development moment that stands out for you?
Well, there was this one project where we had to create a very complex checkout process with different possible states. Initial purchase, already subscribed, canceled subscription. It was a nightmare without type definitions. But once we mapped it all out with intermediate types and pure functions, it all started to make sense. Testing became a breeze too.
I hear you. Those intermediate types like discounts or checkout page state really help in managing the complexity. It's these smaller steps that connect your core entities to your final UI. Once the types are defined, the rest just flows.
And don't forget, defining types also means fewer debug sessions. You catch so many errors just by letting the type checker do its job. It's like having an extra set of eyes watching your back.
That's true. So for anyone out there still hesitant about diving deep into type-driven development, trust us, it's worth it. It might be daunting at first, but the clarity and robustness it brings to your projects are game-changing.
And hey, if you're a little lazy like me, it also makes your future self very grateful. 6 months down the line, you'll thank yourself for having those detailed type definitions. It's like a gift you give yourself.
Absolutely. Future. You will appreciate it more than you know. It's like leaving a trail of breadcrumbs that'll save you from so much frustration later on.
So, Core, diving back into our discussion on hardware and digital logic chips, it's fascinating how susceptible these components are to electrical interference. I mean, noisy or unstable power can wreak havoc on operations, right?
Absolutely, Jack. People often underestimate the precision required for these circuits to function correctly. Your power lines, data lines, reset lines, if they're unstable, it's game over. And don't get me started on CPLDs versus FPGAs. No built-in IP logic, no PLLs or DCMs. You're pretty much on your own.
Yeah, and it's surprising because you would think in 2023, manufacturers would have built-in solutions by now. But hey, that's where some serious Google Foo comes in handy. I found this trick involving Xilinx forums. You can double the frequency of a digital circuit by phase delaying a signal a bit and then XORing an inverse of the delayed signal with the original. Clever, right?
That's brilliant. Essentially, you're creating a boosted signal without needing those fancy built-ins you get with FPGAs. It's like a hacker's way to MacGyver your way out of a problem. This kind of ingenuity is what pushes technology forward, even when manufacturers don't give you all the tools up front.
Exactly. It's all about problem solving. Speaking of clever solutions, let's pivot to something more high level. We were talking about integrative approaches in web development, specifically payment pages, rendering a page depending on the user's state, and making sure active subscriptions convert to discounts. Any thoughts?
Sure thing, Jack. This concept is reminiscent of pure functions, where you take a product and a user and boom, you have a checkout page state. For an active subscription, you convert that to a discount. Clean, modular, and efficient, just like good circuit design.
That's a great analogy. But switching to business, how about Spotify being under the control of the major labels like Sony, Universal, and Warner? They pretty much had Spotify in a chokehold from the beginning, making sure only they raked in the cash.
Yeah, talk about a tough spot to start in. Spotify is paying out 70% of its revenue to labels and publishers and still struggling to turn a profit because of the initial agreements. It's a classic case of the middleman eating the biggest piece of the pie, leaving the creators with scraps.
The balance of power is crazy, and the frustration artists feel is palpable. I mean, making stock music for companies like Epidemic Sound, the creative process becomes more about churning out what fits a playlist vibe rather than true artistic expression.
It's almost like becoming a music factory worker. Sure, you get a steady paycheck, but in the long run, you're giving away your intellectual property for peanuts. The tracks might blow up on streaming platforms, but the revenue sharing is unfair, and the artists don't see the long-term benefits.
Exactly. It's all about owning your masters. That's where the real money is. And then on the tech side, you have these venture firms signing pledges to avoid foreign influence. It sounds good on paper, but without a formal vetting process, how much can we really trust?
That's the crux of it. There's always a loophole. Limited partners might be clean, but who's funding those partners? The global money flow in venture capital is murky at best.
Speaking of murky financial waters, Charm's prepping for its IPO, valued at $25 billion at one point. But can it hit the mark when the paperwork goes public and investors start scrutinizing?
It's a tall order, Jack. The market conditions are unpredictable, and we've seen fintechs rise and fall quickly. Chime's got a strong start, but it needs to prove its worth to the big investors.
Kind of like proving your signal stability in a high-stakes digital circuit, right?
Exactly. Stability is key, whether you're dealing with electronics or market valuations.
And on that note, we'll continue scrutinizing the intersection of tech, finance, and innovation, because it's these insights that help us navigate through this fast-paced world.
Couldn't have said it better, Jack. As always, it's all about staying plugged into the latest developments and understanding how they impact the bigger picture.
Wow, Core. What a jam-packed episode today. From the latest advancements in AI technology to those unexpected twists in the political landscape, we covered a lot of ground.
Absolutely, Jack. And don't forget our deep dive into the business sector, especially that lively debate on cryptocurrency regulations. I think we might have ruffled some feathers.
Hey, why don't we? But that's what makes AI Unchained special. No topic is too controversial, and no stone is left unturned.
True. And let's not forget the laughs along the way. Your joke about the robot bartender was classic, Jack.
Well, CORR, it's all about making these complex topics a bit more accessible and fun for our listeners. Speaking of which, it's time to wrap things up.
Right. Thank you for joining us today on AI Unchained. We hope you enjoyed our discussions and gained insights.
And remember, whether it's business trends or the latest in tech, we're here to break it all down for you.
See you next time, folks. Stay curious and keep questioning everything.
Until then, keep those debates lively and the humor even livelier. Take care.
Goodbye.